Hello, mamas. Welcome to another episode of Moms of the Night, where we are creating a safe and sacred space to just chat about motherhood. No experts, no we know best advice, just real and raw conversations around topics that we all just want to talk about. And today is a topic that I don't love talking about because it's a heavy one, but it's a conversation that needs to be had. And I know if you are a lost mom, this one's going to hit home for you. And I hope you feel like you can kind of sit in solidarity with us and feel validated about things you might be feeling or have felt. And if you haven't gone through loss, I still feel like it's an awesome episode to listen to have a deeper understanding of what lost moms are going through and how you can best support one that you love, because statistics show it's one in four of us. And so it's likely that someone in your circle has also gone through it. So today you're going to hear my conversation with Arden. She's the founder of the Miscarriage Doula, which is an online resource and virtual support service for those experiencing loss at any gestation. And I actually found Arden after experiencing my third loss. I was hopeful to get pregnant again and was looking for support for moms going through pregnancy after loss. And so I was actually part of her very first pregnancy after loss support group among an amazing group of women who also signed up with me. And at the time, I wasn't actually pregnant, but really hopeful to be. And so were a few of the other women in the group. And we all ended up getting pregnant or had successful babies after that, which is just so cool. I love that I was connected to Arden. She's truly changed my life. And it was amazing to sit down with her today and just thank her and share my gratitude for everything that she's doing. And before we get into this week's episode, I just want to say that if you are currently walking through loss or find yourself not in a place to listen to raw, transparent conversations about loss, I want you to know that if you need a break, if you need to pause, or if you feel like you just need to skip this episode, that is okay. I want to hold space for you and send you the biggest virtual hug. Come back when you're ready, if you're ever ready. So Arden and I talk about the realities of miscarriage, the things we weren't prepared for, how much work still needs to be done in supporting those who are going through miscarriage. We chat about relationships and how grieving differently with your partner can be so difficult. And I just hope by the end of this episode that you are feeling seen and less alone in your loss journey. And then don't miss the end with Arden's Dear Mama monologue. Her words hit straight to my soul, and I know you will want to hear them too. So here's my conversation with Arden Cartet. Hi, friend.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing good. I feel like being in the world of miscarriage, the answer I always look for is okay. I feel like after loss, we're forever grieving and things come up, but for the most part, yeah. I feel like doing good.
I was seeing your stories the other day about kind of the waves of grief, and I just could relate so much to, I know you lost your dad as well, and I've lost my mom, and I feel like grief kind of finds its way of intertwining itself between loss as well. So
yeah,
definitely comes in waves, and it's amazing to me too, sometimes being, you know, a few years out from losing baby is how it just still creeps in
yeah,
surprising ways. So
it does. And it's, you know, there is a definition for it where it's like cumulative grief, where it's like whenever we have multiple losses and one loss is triggered, it might trigger something else in another loss. And then it's almost like we just continue to carry the weight of all of this grief until it's like, okay, I need somebody to help me put this down or I'm going to suffocate. And sometimes it gets unbearable.
Yes, that's so true. Thank you so much for being here. I know this is our second go at this. Arden was actually my very first interview. So we were both learning a lot and we listened back and we had a few audio issues. So we are trying this again. Fingers crossed. It is going to be better than ever. So yes, thank you for making this work again. I was moved by our conversation, and I think it brought up even additional things that I would love to chat about in regards to miscarriage. I feel like it's just something that cannot be talked about enough, to be honest with you. So I'm just really glad to have this conversation and open up this topic that just brings with it a lot of isolation and shame. And from some of the mothers I've already connected with through the podcast, just not really having the right words, but wanting to feel seen and understood. So I feel like this is the perfect time to have this conversation.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's great that we're with a motherhood podcast to still talk about loss, because mothers experience loss, whether it's before yes. living children or after living children, between them. So it's an important conversation for sure.
For sure. So I just wanted to explain our connection for everybody, because I just always think it's a beautiful way that our lives have been intertwined and how you've changed my life. I was part of Arden's very first pregnancy after loss support group. I've mentioned that many times in this podcast, how pivotal that group was for me in a time when I didn't really even know how much I needed it. And I know you're doing so many amazing things for women through the miscarriage doula and your support groups. And so I just, one, need to thank you for that, because that group of women got me through such a really difficult time in life, but have also been there to celebrate each other as we've walked into motherhood with our Earthside babies and still talk almost every day.
Yeah.
And so, like, what a beautiful gift. I truly can't thank you enough. And I just want to be able to shout out the work you're doing for mothers and connecting and creating community. So, yeah, just a beautiful connection and an amazing, amazing work you're doing.
Well, I thank you that it's helpful to you, because I feel like that's all I want to hear, is that connections are made and that support is helpful. I think your pregnancy after loss group is still talking, and it's been 2 years, 3 years?
Almost three.
Yeah. How yeah. crazy is that? So it's, yeah. that's the most touching thing. And if I could like work my whole life and just see connections made, that would be enough fulfillment for me. I also like to say that it's support I wish I had, because when I was pregnant after loss, well, I've been pregnant after loss a few times, but whenever I was pregnant with my first living son, I felt like I didn't belong in a normal pregnancy setting. I felt like people couldn't relate to me. I felt like maybe they saw my fears as too morbid to voice out loud. You know, and then in motherhood, I felt like I was struggling with grief, with so many different things. And it's really important for us to find community with people who have been through similar things.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like that was one of the hardest parts of miscarriage for me, was the isolation and the lack of feeling understood and seen in so many different aspects, right? I feel like yeah. I didn't maybe know it at the time, but I felt like I was the only person in my circle that was going through loss or that had gone through loss. And it almost makes me grateful that I ended up sharing it, even though it felt strange and new charted territory to be that vulnerable with both my circle and the online world to share such a personal journey. But I feel like through sharing really allowed people to open up their stories to me, for people who were in my circle that I had no idea experienced the same thing. And being able to feel seen in that moment is something that really gave me a lot of comfort.
Yeah. Yeah. And I say that because now my job is a bereavement doula under the company of the miscarriage doula, I went and bought a car and I had to put my occupation down. And so I had to put my company name. And it was a younger guy that was helping me buy this car. And I have like, I didn't even think twice about it. It's not something that I really, I'm not embarrassed by it, or I don't feel any of the feelings maybe I felt when I was in the thick of it. But he looked at me and he said, "Can you tell me more about this?" He said, "My wife just had her third miscarriage." And it started a conversation with this guy who was just helping me buy a car. And it's like that is, it's so needed, where it's like somebody kind of like lays out their hand and it's like, this is what I've been through, and gives somebody else an opportunity to be like, tell me more about it because I'm going through that and I don't have support.
Yeah, I love that he asked.
Me too.
Like, because I think sometimes even for men, it's really hard for them to comprehend what's happening, to have support for themselves as well. I know my husband brought that up many times, where it was like he felt he was just supposed to be the support system and not the one that needed to be supported too when he lost a baby as well. And that's like a whole nother layer of loss that still needs so much work to be done. Yeah. And we can dive into that more. But I would love to hear more, to give people a little bit of insight into your world, what your journey to motherhood looked like, your loss experiences, and then what motherhood looks like for you today.
Yeah, well, it's I will try and keep it short because I will not ramble how long it feels like that journey is. I always, and I think it's important on a motherhood podcast to kind of start by saying that I was never somebody who dreamed of being a mom. I never felt born to be a mom. I didn't feel like I had a maternal bone in my body. I had a relationship with my parents that wasn't a loving one, and so I didn't really see great examples for parents growing up, to where I didn't feel like I needed to do that exact same thing. And then meeting my husband, we talked about kids. It was more so of like, this is what comes next. But we also kind of had the thought of, if it doesn't happen, we'll be okay. Like, because we didn't have that urge to like make it happen no matter what. I will say for me, that changed. Like, once we started trying to conceive, I went into trying to conceive with a severe fear of pregnancy and birth. It sounded scary, and rightfully so. But, you know, after like 4 or 5 months of trying and nothing was happening, I started to get more concerned than scared. And then it took us a year and a half to achieve our first pregnancy. We had just started seeing a fertility specialist. I had really short cycles, and I think I just had some hormonal stuff going on. And so I always say that my journey to motherhood, the first time I took a positive pregnancy test, or I got a positive pregnancy test, I literally put my hand on my stomach and was like, oh my gosh, I'm a mom. Like, that was my first instinct in that moment. And that meant a lot to me because I never felt like that before. I never had that, I'm meant to do this. I never had that desire like I did in that moment. And so to me, I say that that moment, I became a mom. I started feeling the care for another life. I started worrying about that other life and dreaming of them. And that changed everything in my brain chemistry from that very moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like when people talk about being a mom and becoming a mom, they say mom to be, you know, when you think about baby showers and things like that. And that's never how I felt. I felt like the minute I saw those two lines and my whole world was then centered around caring for this life growing inside of me, that was when I became a mom. And I truly feel like that is the most accurate representation, right? And for anyone who's walking through, still waiting for their journey to unfold and have a baby in their arms, I feel like being able to hear that validation of you are a mom, even when you're trying, I mean, you are doing, most of the time, doing all the things to prepare for that sweet baby. And that those are those motherhood instincts that kick in, right? To change your diet and making sure you're tracking. And like, if you're really deep into the trying to conceive journey, and I think we all can know how that goes, that's motherhood. That's putting somebody else's needs over your own, putting your needs so that you can have this baby. And I feel like that's fully encompassing of what a mom is, right?
I completely agree. And I think that we don't get enough validation, but I also find in my work that some people don't feel like that, which is also fine.
Yeah.
So I always like to ask the question of, if somebody feels like a mom, if somebody wishes to be acknowledged as a mom, you know, the people around me, even my husband, as kind and supportive as he was, he could never understand how that switched for me. And so like Mother's Day, you know, he didn't think to do anything. And that was hurtful to me because I didn't feel acknowledged as a mom after we experienced loss. And it's just, it's so different. And for him, he didn't feel like a dad until our first living child was born. He, of course, loved the pregnancies that we experienced, miscarriages, but it was a different connection. And, you know, even thinking about motherhood, I compare it sometimes to like whenever we have guilt, like my first pregnancy, long story short, is it ended in a miscarriage at home. And I felt so much guilt because I had a miscarriage at home and I didn't save any remains. I flushed the toilet and I felt a lot of guilt for that. And it took me a few years to process that that was mom guilt, that it was a version of mom guilt that happened during pregnancy loss. And then if you really unpack a lot of the shame and guilt that we feel in pregnancy loss, it stems back from the definition of mom guilt. And it's just, it's viewed so different in society, which makes it invalidating and really difficult.
Yes. 100% yes. And I just want to go back to what you said, because I've actually had a few women after I shared in my first episode about my second loss where I delivered at home and yes, flushed the toilet. I had a few women reach out to me and say, oh my goodness, I just needed somebody to say this out loud. Mm-hmm. I needed someone to acknowledge that someone else did this too, because I've been carrying the weight of that for so long. And I feel that so deeply to my core. I didn't know I had any other option. I also didn't know what to expect, right? I left the hospital with them saying, okay, it's going to feel like a period. You'll bleed. You'll be done. Okay. But it didn't process in my mind what was actually happening in my body. I didn't know that the cramping that was coming in waves that I was experiencing was labor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No one tells you that. And in a way, maybe I would have felt a little bit more, and maybe empowered's not the best word, but just understanding and validating that what I was going through was actually delivering my baby. And I wish I would have known then what I know now, because, again, carrying the weight of that experience and how traumatizing that was is, I think, still something I'm processing and probably will forever process. And I just want people to understand and be able to be validated in their feelings around that. And that I think a lot of us have been in those shoes and not known what to do.
Well, even, you know, I think about this to this day, now that I know the options and understand them, I don't know if I would have chosen to do a home collection and to, you know, gone through the remains of my baby. I don't know if I would have chosen that option either. They're both pretty terrible, you know?
Yeah, I don't know either.
So it's like, even if I knew my options, would I have changed it? I don't think so. I think I would have felt more guilt for choosing to flush. Mm-hmm. But I also, you know, it's something I still, I think of often. We've moved houses since, and whenever we left the house that we were at during my miscarriages, this is, it's so morbid, but I know that the miscarriage community will understand, where it's like they had to come and clean out our like sewer or whatever. And I had never thought about like the whole sewer process and stuff. And I, for a moment, felt like, oh my God, they're taking the remains of my baby, which sounds so weird and so terrible that that hit me in that moment. But it goes back to that connection of like something just kind of like clicked in me of like, this is what they're doing. And did my baby go there? And then I felt bad for that. And that was only a year and a half ago, you know, so it's still definitely still haunts me.
Yeah. And I feel like it's like the weight of those decisions too, because miscarriage can go so many different ways. And in a lot of scenarios, you're given different options and none of them seem like a great option, right? Because you just lost your baby. Right. But then you're layering on a really big decision and not understanding like what is the best decision here. I mean, I just lost my baby. And maybe just even having that understanding of like, is a decision ever going to feel right for something that,
probably not,
that hurts us so bad. And and again, like every circumstance is so different. Each of my losses was so different from the next one. And I feel like that's something I really wasn't prepared for either, because it you know, my first one was more similar to a chemical, even though it wasn't classified as that. Second one, actually delivering at home, going through the more visual process of that, I feel like there's, you know, different triggers for that. And then the third being a chemical loss. And I feel like that comes with even maybe more invalidation, because it happens in such a blink. And then you cause yourself questioning, like, did that count? Was, you know?
Yeah.
And to be able to already be feeling that grief and then wondering if that counts. I mean, it absolutely counts. That baby was there.
It totally counts. And I'm a firm believer of that. I will literally like tell people to stop using the word chemical if they are degrading their own loss. And
yeah,
I've only recently started to process that in our fertility journey. I think I had a chemical pregnancy, and it was so dismissed by my doctor as like a weird period that I don't think I've ever, like, I never put the, I don't know, all of the things together until maybe about a year ago. And especially in doing this work and being more informed, I remember, like, I had a weird period. I went to the doctor. I was like, something is going on. A home pregnancy test was showing what I thought was a faint positive, but she was telling me that it was negative. And then she was just like, it could be a chemical pregnancy. And then she explained it in a way of like, it just means that like the chemicals didn't, you know, didn't combine to make a baby. And the way she explained it kind of made me feel like, so I can't be upset about this because she's telling me this is nothing.
Yeah.
And I never really thought about it again until maybe about a year ago. And it makes me wonder if that was ever a pregnancy. I have no confirmation of it. It's just speculation. But yeah, then even like whenever I talk about the fact that I've had two miscarriages, I've been pregnant four times, if that was a pregnancy and I'm not aware of it and I'm not counting it in my count, what kind of mom does that make me? And it's just this, it's a hard thing to process even though I'm in this world.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just feel like, you know, you use the word dismissed, and I feel like that's the perfect word to use in a lot of scenarios. I know there's just so far we still have to go in the medical community for supporting women through miscarriage. I understand that there are certain terminology that are used in the medical system. I hope to live to see the day that some of those get changed for the sake of women, but I can understand, and I have been there and feeling dismissed by how certain things are classified, and that messes with your mental state around how you should feel around your miscarriage. And I don't think there is a should. There's everyone's going to process it so differently, and I'm sure you've seen that in your work, like how everyone kind of processes, grieves, and then chooses to find acceptance or live on from their miscarriages. Have you seen just like a vast variety in that?
Honestly, it all looks really similar, which I think is all the more validating that at different gestations, it really is similar. And we used to have our groups where it was general miscarriage or pregnancy after loss. And so it was all gestations, all types of loss put together. And we've started to kind of put like recurrent loss together, first trimester loss together, second trimester loss together, but mainly because I realized that different types of losses were then triggers for other people because they were afraid that they would experience other types of losses. And so not so much that people weren't finding support in different losses. It was just that it seemed to be a really triggering conversation for a lot of people. But it's really similar. And I think that with quote unquote chemical pregnancies, there's a lot of doctors dismissing the, you know, the proof that pregnancy existed. Or I like to say that, like, I paint it as it happens so quickly that our brain can't process something that fast. You can't see a positive pregnancy test, whether it's faint or not, be like, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant. Oh my gosh, I'm bleeding. Oh my gosh, this is a negative pregnancy test. Oh, I had a miscarriage. All within a few days. Like, that doesn't nobody's brain is wired to process that in, you know, in an instant. But then it's the same thing with like first trimester losses. They differ so much. And you talk about language. And I like to make it clear that even though my business is the miscarriage doula, I hate the term miscarriage. I hate a lot of terms in pregnancy loss. Like I was just talking about like some of the reasons that loss happens. And we talk about like incompetent cervix. And I hate all of the language. Like it makes me just see red. But it is birth, and birth for every single person looks different at any gestation and any style and any recovery. You know, that looks different. Everybody has different experiences. Even with full term birth, you'll hear somebody say like, oh, I pushed my baby out in 2 pushes, no epidural, and it was great. And then you'll have somebody else who pushed for 3 hours, had the epidural, and they're extremely traumatized from their experience, and vice versa. It's birth. It just looks different, and it's more morbid and not happy.
Yeah. And I think that maybe is where people start to feel isolated too, right? Because it can look so different. Right. It's hard to find support in that when sometimes you just want someone that understands exactly what you went through. And that can be almost impossible with how different things can look like. But I do feel like there is this really strong community and connection through people who have gone through loss, no matter what it's looked like, that being able to sit in solidarity together is really important. What I found is I feel like as the conversation around miscarriage continues to be a little bit more open and people talking about it, it's starting to help people who haven't walked through loss understand how to support those who are going through it. And that's one thing where I feel like it was really hard for me to navigate mentally around what kind of support I needed, because I didn't really know at the time. I feel like I know more now. But then also what felt right as far as people's responses to loss. Yeah. Because that can also play in your mindset. I remember having a few people respond in ways that I didn't really expect. And it did. It made me question like, oh, should I not be sad about this? Or, oh, should I not, you know, even when it came to trying again, it was like, oh, well, that your losses were like 6 months ago. Like, what are you worried about? So when it comes to supporting somebody through miscarriage, what did you find? Did you have anybody that just really showed up in a way you needed? Or did you have any crazy responses that just like did not sit well?
Yeah, I had both. I'll start with the crazy one because I want to brag on my friend after that. But my I'll say a family member. I called after our first ultrasound to say, you know, it doesn't look good. They don't know if the baby is viable. I have to go back in a week. And then I went back a week later and they were like, there's some growth, but not enough growth. And so I relayed this message to this person and their response was, so you really are pregnant? As if like I hadn't been pregnant for the previous 7 weeks that they – like we told them right away. And so it was a comment like that that's always stuck out to me. Or because we struggled to get pregnant first, I had a lot of people say, at least you know you can get pregnant now, which is such a bizarre thing to say. I had somebody say, oh, be grateful it wasn't later. It's just – people said the weirdest things. And then I had – I'm a loner, like at heart. Like I'm an introverted person. I do best when I'm by myself, which is interesting because I literally talk to people all the time for my job, and I love connecting with people. But I think because it's virtual, it like still fits into my like introverted nature. But I'm an introvert that can fake being an extrovert, is how I like to put it. If that makes sense.
I love that. I can definitely relate to that. Yes.
And so I have a really close friend who I knew that her and her husband, who is also a close friend of mine, we all went to high school together. They were trying to conceive, and she was pregnant. She was 3 weeks ahead of my first pregnancy. And even though I was pregnant with her, she still was super mindful. She didn't send me pictures or send me too much information. She knew to rely on other people for that support because I was just anxious. And then whenever I had my miscarriage, she continued to be pregnant. And without me even having to tell her that I was afraid that that was going to be triggering, she just was like, I'm here, but I'm not going to be in your face because I don't want to be a trigger. Like, if you want to talk, why don't you text me? That way you could take your time in responding. She's like, if you want to see me, I want you to make the plans because I don't want to spring something on you. I also noticed that she wore a lot of baggy clothes whenever I was with her. And I think that some people would view that as like, oh, well, she's like trying to hide from you. And I'm like, that helped me. That also showed that she was like aware that her belly could be a trigger. But the biggest support that she gave me was just by like remembering dates, remembering appointments, sending me a message before a follow-up ultrasound, or if we jumped into our treatment right away, like she just remembered to check in and she didn't go missing on me. And I think that was, for me, that was the support I needed.
The acknowledgement is so huge. When I remember that feeling, and I need to make this a point, because babies do not replace babies. Mm-mm. And it's still amazing to me that now that I have two Earthside kids, and I know you also do, how now bringing up our past babies, I feel like people just assume that, oh, well, you have two Earthside babies now. So, you know, I mean, you must not worry or think about your other ones. And that is so – I still grieve on the days that they were due. I still grieve on the days that I, you know, delivered them. All of those dates are triggering. And when people are able to even just acknowledge their existence, that they were here, that they're part of the equation and part of our family, that is something that is just one of the best ways you can respect and honor life. And so, if there's anything I can say in supporting your friends that have gone through loss, is just remember and acknowledge it. And I know some people don't want to talk. I mean, everyone has a certain level of how much they want that. But if it is somebody who really is open and wants to talk about it, to just acknowledge it.
And to not be afraid to ask somebody how they want to be supported. I think that we think we have to be mind readers just because we're friends or friendly or a family member. But, you know, telling somebody that you want to support them, but you want to support them in a way that best benefits them, and asking them to tell you what they need is not a bad thing. And they might not know, and that they know that you're there. And that sometimes is just enough.
Yeah, for sure. And just being able to, having that open communication. And, you know, the worst somebody can say is like, hey, I'm just not ready to talk about it, or don't want to talk about it. And I feel like sometimes we just feel we can get defensive in those moments because we don't, you know, the topic is very touchy. But I think the most beautiful friends are the ones who can break those barriers and at least just ask.
Yeah.
And I think about that with partners too, because, you know, I feel like if there's anything I've learned through loss, it's how differently you can grieve in a relationship. And I feel like that can be so hard, not only in the moment, but then as you move on with life. Because I'll admit, I mean, there are times when I'm having a rough day because some of that grief is kicking up. And, you know, again, we can't be mind readers, but I just assume like, oh, you don't remember, like today is the day we lost our baby, or today was their due date. And some people just don't think that way. And being able to have an understanding of like, well, I just don't grieve that way. I think especially more so when it's happening, right? Yeah. You really learn. And it's maybe a little bit harder for us as moms when we have the physical part of it and our partners do not, that can be really hard for them to understand. But did you find that really difficult to walk with you and your husband on your own grieving journeys and how you communicate in that and support each other in that?
Yeah, and it's something we continue to work on. Like my husband doesn't remember dates, and our pregnancies, all of the due dates oddly fell on like a date that we already meant something else. So it's, he can't forget about the due dates, which is helpful. But for me, I actually feel more attached to the dates that I actually gave birth at home. I also remember the date that I got my first pregnancy test. You know, those dates kind of stick into my mind, but they don't stick into his. And I've even learned, you know, you mentioned at the top of the call of like about grief of different kinds. With my dad dying, I have so many dates of like the last time I talked to him, the last time I saw him. And these are dates that I know because I was there, but he doesn't necessarily remember. And so it's something I've had to continue to do over the last few years of saying, hey, by the way, this Saturday is this date and it means this to me. And I just need you to be gentle and like, maybe don't talk to me or like ask me to do too much. And so I've learned that giving him a heads up also relieves me of the expectation of him remembering because he doesn't remember anything, but it's not because he doesn't care. And so that's something I've had to work on in therapy for many years. But I would say like our connection, we felt really connected after our first loss. After our second loss, that broke me in a different way where he was like, okay, we've been here before. Let's pick up the pieces and move on. And I was like, I don't want to get pregnant again. I was really hesitant. I didn't really want to dive in. And then for him, us having living children, it healed that part of him. And he doesn't think the same way that I do. Like I have pieces of art that I have before my first living son was born where it's me and him and it's like us holding two angels. And so I had it up on the wall and he was like, aren't you nervous about Cameron seeing it and asking why he's not in that picture? And I was like, no, because the way I think of it is like when you were growing up, he was the third child. Did your parents just trash all the photos of them with your brother and sister? Or like whenever we got our fourth dog, did we trash the pictures of us with our other three dogs? Like that doesn't make any sense to me. So he views it differently. He doesn't need those mementos. Or, you know, if you were to ask him about like our first living son, him being our first kid, I will say he's our first living kid. I always refer to him as my third pregnancy. And so it's just I've learned to meet him where he's at, and he learns not to make a comment if he doesn't understand why I still do that. It's also the same, you know, my kids were made with the help of medications and fertility doctors, and we didn't do IVF, but I had a lot of other meds and a lot of other things. And so anytime, like whenever I did a pregnancy announcement for my fourth pregnancy, my second living son, I put like with the help of science. And he was like, I feel like that takes some credit away from us. And I was like, but he wouldn't be here without that science. So it's like me plus you plus science equals this baby. So it's like our viewpoints have really not aligned, but we've learned to kind of respect that.
Yeah, my husband and I have been the same way. Like I feel like those journeys are very much aligned with ours where, you know, there are things that I remember that he doesn't, and just kind of, again, respecting where they're at, which can be really hard when you're both actively grieving and finding that communication. But I will say, like, with time, I feel like it helps when the dust settles just a little bit to be able to have that capacity to have those open conversations and just kind of ask each other how you're preferring to go about this and being able to have respect for their decision, because that's what you would do in any other scenario with another person in your life, is trying to respect how they choose to grieve. It's just harder when that person is the direct person impacted with us to have that kind of understanding. Because sometimes that can feel like lack of support, but really it's just that we all handle things so differently.
Yeah. Well, and I will say, so my first loss happened, 4.5 years ago, 5 years ago. I can't think about the math right now, but, he was in the bathroom with me and he saw everything that happened, and he was very, you know, he was traumatized by watching his wife go through that. And so he's always known that blood is really difficult for me. And so anytime my period starts and I'm a little on edge by the blood, he is immediately understanding. He has stood in the bathroom with me while I've changed a tampon or a pad. That way I could just feel safe. After our living children were born, he was really helpful in reminding me that that's not blood from a miscarriage. to this day, like I'm no longer trying to grow my family, and my periods, they, if they catch me off guard, it's a trauma response every single time. Yeah. And he immediately like knows that we, like, I have to drop everything and go take care of it and like just collect mm-hmm. myself in the bathroom. And he's really great about that. So even though there are things he doesn't understand, there are things that he understands too well as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And being able to show up in those moments is so important. I think that's something too, where that communication piece comes in, because I remember getting periods after the losses and not realizing that was going to be such a trigger for me.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to really understand that for my own self, but then being able to have to communicate that to him, because he was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. Like, I didn't even think about how that could be really traumatizing. And so sometimes it's just coming forth with moments that are feeling triggering to just be like, oh, this just put me in a bad spot. And it could be as anything that's more visual, like a period, or, you know, sometimes it's just random, like grief just comes in waves. And when it least expects, when you least expect it, I think especially when it comes to pregnancy after loss, that was a whole nother experience for us with the anxiety and what kind of put us on edge. And again, being together in that experience, what made us anxious was different.
Yeah.
And, you know, the littlest things would set me off. Like with Lily, my most recent one, we had gotten the blood work done, not knowing that I found out super early with her. I didn't realize it because I guess I ovulated super late. And they got the HCG back and it was a 10. And I was like, this, I mean, it's over. It's done. And that's not something that triggered him. But for me, I was like, I was gone. My head was immediately towards, there's no way this is going forward. And I think that's kind of our protect. That's way our heart protects itself. Yeah. Way our mind protects itself. But it can add, I think, to like the loneliness of it all when everyone's triggered by different things, right?
Yeah. And the triggers change, you know.
They do.
Something could trigger you one time and not trigger you ever again. Yeah. And it's kind of a cruel game. And, you know, I'm somebody who I like to learn why things happen. And with miscarriage, obviously, that's really hard. But with trauma, it's been really helpful for me to dive into learning all about trauma. And that's also, you know, why I became a bereavement doula, of talking about grief and trauma with pregnancy loss. But it's literally like, we have these memories of this terrible thing happening. So our brain is like, hey, we were blindsided last time. We need to be on high alert for this to happen again. We need a heads up that we were not traumatized a second go around. And so it's like you're constantly on edge waiting for that same thing to happen again, because that's the memory that you have associated with pregnancy. And so it's literally, it's a response that we cannot control. And we're constantly having to coddle ourselves, which is really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And how many times that happens. I feel like when you look at loss, a lot of times from an external perspective, it looks like, oh, well, you lost a baby, so that's what you're grieving. And a lot of times it's so much more than that. It's like, no, I didn't just lose a baby. I lost, you know, getting to know if that baby was a boy or girl. I lost the future with them. I lost, you know, there's so much
trust in your body.
Trust in your body. Oof. Let's get into
there's
that.
There's a lot of losses.
There's a lot of losses. And that one is huge. For me, I did not expect in the immediate moment, obviously, of going through miscarriage, my mind was centered around that baby. In the months after, and trying to grieve and recover from that, I did not realize how much that was going to affect how I viewed my body and my capability as a mom and as a person, and feeling not only like my body failed me, but that like I was failing my partner. Like, it was like on me, right? And I feel like that's something that, and again, carried with me in pregnancy after a loss is like, yes, I was still holding this baby, but like every moment felt so fragile because I just didn't trust my body. I just didn't. And I feel like a lot of people go through that. And still to this day, like, we don't know if we're done or not having kids. And I still fear, you know, I know I've had two successful pregnancies now, but even thinking about having another pregnancy, it's like, can I still trust my body? Like, was that enough? Was two enough? Because I've lost three, you know, and I didn't expect that to come with miscarriage.
I completely agree. And I think, you know, if I'm being honest, I still don't trust my body. Like, my cycles are insane after four pregnancies. I have a lot of hormone things. Like, I hold my body responsible for a lot of things, which I guess is helpful because I never held myself responsible. I didn't feel that self-blame. Mm-hmm. Instead, I thought about me and my body as two separate beings. And that was helpful in coping. But also, I did the same thing in pregnancy after loss where I was like, okay, I have to think about me and my baby over here and my body over there, because if I combine all of that, I'm going to drive myself nuts. And so, like, I started leaning on trusting my baby instead of my body. And that was really helpful because I think everything changed with my first pregnancy. The way I view my body changed. And then also, like, I lost a lot of respect for my body because, mm-hmm. you know, we're told as women we should do this, this, and this. And you see other people having a family of six or seven and never experiencing loss. And you're like, whoa, that's possible? Why is that not possible for me? And then you naturally, you know, if you just go deeper and deeper into it, like mentioning my parents, I thought, oh, is this the universe telling me that I wasn't supposed to have kids, that I would make a terrible mom? And mm-hmm. it just trickles down to so much distrust in everything about our beings. And it's hard to come back from that.
And a lot of guilt. And I know you said I think that's almost a protective mechanism too, is when you're able to view yourself separately from your body. And that I think this is more just in my nature too, but I just felt so guilty. I just felt like everything was my fault. And then I overanalyzed anything I did. Like, I remember with our first loss, right before that, we had gone on our honeymoon. We weren't trying. So like, we weren't really expecting to be pregnant. And I obviously drank and had a good time. Wasn't really taking care of my body all that well. Just enjoying our honeymoon. And I still look back on those photos and like, how did I not know I was pregnant? Like, I still wonder, like, was that my fault? You know? And I feel like you can drive yourself crazy going down those rabbit holes, and we'll never know the answers, unfortunately. But I feel like a lot of people can relate to that, in that it's really easy to put the blame on yourself.
Totally. And I naturally am somebody who blames myself for literally any inconvenience. But I will say, because I have OCD, and so I get really compulsive about things. And a lot of my compulsions are like around food, or making sure that I couldn't even dive into all of my problems. But with me, my first pregnancy, I cut out caffeine. I was eating healthier. I didn't eat lunch meats. I just literally took it way too far. And I still had a miscarriage. And so to me, instead of viewing it as like, oh, I'm to blame, I was like, screw you, body. Like, I did everything and you did nothing. So for me, it took another way. But I will also say that I am medicated for OCD. So I think that also helped me in not taking on that blame, because I didn't obsess over those things that I would have blamed, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah,
so
for sure.
I think there's so many avenues of it. But then I also carried that into my next pregnancy, where I was like, F this. I am not cutting out caffeine, because I did that and I didn't get a baby at the end.
Yeah.
So I took a more rebellious route in my future pregnancies.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. And I see a lot where, you know, people, they feel that blame, or they feel, you know, they feel responsible for their partner's grief or for their mm-hmm. parents' grief as grandparents. And I empathize so much with that, even though it wasn't my experience.
Yeah. I think that can be a really hard thing to carry, because that's a lot of weight to carry. Much pressure to put on ourselves. And then you do, you feel so much pressure as you go into, you know, trying again. And I feel like it can feel like you were robbed of that experience, because if you do choose to share, like for us, we chose to share with our families really early with all of our pregnancies. And every single time then we would have a loss, it felt like we were more and more robbed. And then by the time we got to Owen, and it was like, we feel really good about this, we did wait a little bit longer to share with him, it was almost like they were also waiting with bated breath, like, is this for real? And, you know, rightly so, but also like, it was so defeating.
Yeah.
It was so defeating, because it was like, oh, we like finally got it. And now everyone was feeling like, should we? Is this, you know, is this for real?
Yeah. And it's really uncomfortable. I did have a family member with my fourth pregnancy call me. I was about 20 weeks pregnant, and we very nonchalantly were like, hey, we're pregnant. And like, we don't want to talk about it, but this is what's going on. And this person called me, and I was 20 weeks, and said, are you still pregnant? And I was like, are you asking me if I've had a miscarriage yet? Like, I'm a very blunt person. So whenever they said that to me, I was like, that's a really rude way of asking me how I'm doing.
Like, yeah.
And it's just, I think people are so uncomfortable, because whenever you are open but also reserved at the same time, they're confused about what they can and can't ask, when people should just, I don't know, either not say anything or just be honest, but like in a sensitive way.
Yes.
It's not that hard to be sensitive.
Leading with empathy. Like, even if you've never gone through loss and you can't understand, like, leading with some sort of empathy is always the preferred way.
I mean, to me, it comes natural. I don't know how it doesn't for other people, but it's not something I can relate to.
It's also hard. I feel like there's so many things and so much more work to be done around this topic. I feel like we could record a million episodes of this nature and still never feel like we did it justice.
Yeah.
But I would love to potentially have a part two to this, like once we get people to listen and then come back to it with things that people just really want to be talked about. But because I feel like this is just, it's a topic that's so much on my heart. And obviously, I know it's very much
talk all day.
On your heart too. Yes, I know you could. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with Arden's Dear Mama monologue. So stay tuned for that.
Dear Mama, whether you're a mom in waiting, a mom whose child isn't earthside, or a mom who's holding her child close as she listens to this episode, know that you are loved and needed. Some days might feel more difficult than others, depending on the season of life that you're in, but even the difficult days lead somewhere. Motherhood isn't defined by the number of children you have to show for your efforts or the style of parenting you seem to follow. Your version of motherhood is your own, and only you can dictate what that means. For some, it's the first positive pregnancy test. For others, it's seeing that tiny flicker on the screen, or the day that that baby is born and you can hold and kiss them anytime you want. We all connect to motherhood in different ways, and some of our journeys to get there aren't as clear-cut as we would have hoped. For the mama in waiting whose arms are aching to hold the child that they created and loved so dearly, cling to the few moments that you had where both of you were warm and safe. Remember that your love is all that they ever knew, and death will never remove your title as their mom. For the mama who is postpartum following pregnancy after loss, remember that you can fight hard for this season and admit that it's hard. Two things can be true. This is beautiful and this is hard. Grief doesn't disappear when a baby is finally in your arms. And for the mama who just needs a hug because she spent the day feeling undervalued and overstimulated, know that women all over the world stand beside you and wish they could wrap you in a hug too. Each and every one of you is resilient, and in whatever season you're in, this will fade into another, hopefully better than the last. Whenever I read it, I'm like, I wrote that? That's not
you
bad.
Did. It was more beautiful. Wrote words have never been spoken. That was like,
Sometimes I brainstorm things like to put on social media, and I forget about it for a long time, and I go back and I'm like, is this plagiarized or did I write this? Like, I forget that I write this.
Wrote this.
Yeah.
Well, I always turn my Dear Mama monologues into a little nugget for social. So it will be, and I will make sure that you get it, because those words need to be spoken to every single mom who is gone, going through loss, or just really needing some encouragement, because that was so good. So thanks. Good. Thank you for being here.
Of course.
Tell us where everyone can find you. You are such an amazing resource, and I want people to know how they can be supported by you.
Oh, you're so kind. Everybody can find me on Instagram at The Miscarriage Doula. There's links in the bio there to view my website, which is themiscarriagedoula.co, not .com. We offer one-on-one support, group support for, I call it life after loss of miscarriage, trying to conceive, pregnancy. And then I even talk to clients well into postpartum. So whatever stage of the grief with pregnancy loss is how we support people.
Thank you, everyone. Go check her out. I love your content. It just speaks to my soul whenever I need it, and I know you'll find support in it too. But thank you for being here. Again, I think we should make part two. We'll see when we get there. But for now, it was so good to see you.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Moms of the Night podcast, where we are on a mission to make motherhood, especially those middle of the night hours, feel less lonely. If you know another mama who could use these comforting words tonight, please consider sharing this episode with her. And don't forget to follow and subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. If you're enjoying the episodes, a quick click on that 5-star button and leaving a review would mean the world to me. It's one of the many ways we can reach as many moms as possible who might benefit from hearing these conversations and words of encouragement. Your support means everything. Until next time.